Hi, welcome to the Community Rewatch podcast. I'm Jen, your host through all things Greendale, and happy Halloween. Today, we are going to talk about three of Community's Halloween episodes. For those of you who are wondering why it's not all four, we have already passed season one, so we will not be talking about introduction to statistics. Wow, I can't even say it. So sorry about that. But we will be talking about epidemiology, horror fiction in seven spooky steps, and paranormal parentage today. And I'm very excited because I really enjoy all of these episodes. And you might have noticed that I said we, and it's because I have a full house today of wonderful guests. These are real life friends, which is really fun because a lot of the people that we have on are Twitter friends. So we have Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
What up, though?
Ethan.
Hey.
And Danielle.
Hey, hey.
Hey, welcome, friends. I'm so happy that we're doing this.
Oh, Shaquana's her real life friends. I feel so touched right now.
You are my real life friends, though. Like, in a non-pandemic world, I see you in person and stuff. So it's true. So before we dive into all of these episodes, we have, and normally what we do is we do episode summaries and the community quote of the episode. As we get to each of the episodes, don't worry, friends, I will do those. But before we dive into it, my first question, because you are all first-time guests, is how did each of you hear about Community and fall in love with the show?
I feel like I just kept hearing about it out there in the nether regions of the internet. And so eventually it was in the very early days of the pandemic and nothing was happening with my job. And I wanted something to watch that kind of took me out of just the seriousness of the chaos and nonsense that's happening every day.
That's fair.
And so I just saw it on Netflix. I was like, you know what? Let me give it a try. And then I did and I hated it. That was the first episode. And so I was talking to Ethan about it and he was like, no, you gotta keep trying. Like once you get past the first one, it gets better. So I hung in there and then I binge watched like three seasons in like a 2 week time span.
I'm so proud of you. It is like, it's the pilot is not one of my favorite episodes of the show. So it's kind of one of those, and especially I think I tell this story a lot. When people were talking about it, they were like, oh my gosh, this is a brilliant show. I really didn't like it until like episode six. So I gave it a couple of episodes, but it was not the easiest start. Ethan and Danielle are married, by the way. So they're going to say reference each other just for you all for knowledge of that. So anyway, yeah. Ethan.
I don't remember how I started with Community. I feel like I probably just watched it when it was on. Mm-hmm. And only when I was done watching it did I realize, oh, that was a real good thing actually. Yeah. And then afterwards, like, oh yeah, people should watch Community. But I don't know how much I appreciated it whenever it was on, but I didn't like it and watched it.
So for me, it was one of those shows that I just kept hearing about. Mm-hmm. Like people would describe the show as like, oh, it's super underrated. Like it was one of those shows that a lot of people didn't necessarily watch, but the people who watched it were like super about it. Like
yes.
Happy Endings, that was another show that I heard grouped in with them.
Yeah.
I'm a little different because I started watching it during the fourth season, aka the Gaslit year.
I'm so impressed by that was what you started watching it at.
Yeah.
And then kept going.
Yeah.
I started watching it in season four and then I stopped after, I stopped after season five.
Well, that's right. So Danielle hasn't watched past, haven't you watched past?
I think I'm only on episode two.
Okay.
I have no idea what happens right now, though.
Exactly. So I'm not going to finish that.
I want to apologize for my earlier awkward, like, self-interrupt. I was just trying to, like, I was thinking, like, do I need to go into my relationship with Donald Glover right now?
I mean, yeah.
I think this is an appropriate time to talk.
Yeah. I feel like everyone should talk about their relationship with Donald Glover.
Okay.
All right.
I don't know where this started, and I really don't know if it was, like, Childish Gambino or Community that I interacted with first, but I do remember the night that came to my mind, this Donald Glover entity. I was in the attic. I was in college and I was at a place we had an attic. I was in the attic studying. It was like after midnight and I don't know how, but I was on the internet and I came across a line And it was just like text over like this image of a sunset or some silly thing. It was like, everything I'm saying, I'm Super Saiyan like Goku. And I was like, well, I just need to know all about whoever wrote that. And then I got lost in Donald Glover and Childish Gambino that night. And that has had its effects echo into right now. But there, he came into, was Community. Him and Community overlapped into that.
Yeah.
It's probably what happened.
I always love the people who know Donald Glover from Community and like his earliest albums, like, because the Community cast talks about that, like how they'd be on set and Donald Glover would be like doing his stuff for his albums and recording music. And you're like, okay. And then there's people who are like Childish Gambino. And I want to be like, but have you watched Community? Like and we've talked about this before on our podcast. I don't think it's fair that he's so good at everything he does. I feel like he should have some sort of weakness.
And
I have yet to find, like, what can't he actually do?
Date a Black Girl.
Wow.
Oh, no.
I'm just representing a community here. I don't have those strong feelings about it.
Wow.
The only Black girl I ever dated is my wife. So like, I can't really say anything about Donald Glover.
Oh,
I just people feel that. And I should express so that funny on their behalf.
A lot of people do feel that way. For me, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, mine is going to be, you were talking before you got interrupted.
All right. This is how it is in real life.
It's true.
So for me, I learned about Community with Donald Glover too. I don't remember the first time I'd heard about Donald Glover, but I remember that he, again, like Jen said, was just good at everything. So I'd hear about him, that he was a rapper, and also that he was on this TV show. And then also that he had wrote for 30 Rock. And also he had a YouTube channel. Like, it was just a whole bunch of different things. So I remember like the making of Camp, which was his first album, and seeing that, and then finding out that Ludwig, who does the music for Community, is also his producer. I was like, okay, this guy is phenomenal. And then I found out he was a stand-up comedian and Weirdo is Genius. And I've been a fan of Donald Glover ever since. Wink.
Wink.
My first real introduction to Donald Glover was through Ethan and listening to Bonfire in the car at night one day in his car. And then I next listened to This Is America, but not only listened, got yelled at to come downstairs. I did. He started the music video, and that was a rude way to start my morning. And so that's the only way I knew Donald Glover. And so when I watched Community for the first time, when I tell you I was confused, that doesn't even really fully portray the emotion that I was feeling. If we could say the F word, there was so much of that where I was like, what the is going on? Who is this Black man that is not the Black man I know in real life?
Get your money, Black man.
I still have not reconciled those two images of him in my mind.
You even said that yesterday when we watched it. It's like you had another one of those like, moments where like, what?
Because we've been watching so much Atlanta lately.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
This is such a dissociation too. Like, he's so just different. So different. Like, the
and it
rank
has still the level of humor, but it's just such a different kind of humor than Community. That it's wild that he does both so skillfully.
We're watching Atlanta after this.
I won't complain.
It's what happens after he leaves the community college.
Yeah, he actually just
goes real downhill.
Donald Glover. Yeah, it's so funny because he is so. Troy is just his. Like, Troy is one of the best characters, I think, hands down, in any comedy, and it only works as well as it does because Donald Glover has this ability to like swing from this absurd, like, yelling, like, we'll get there to Epidemiology when I was rewatching today. I was, like, cackling at, you punched a lady bee! And then, like, you have, like, him and, like, Mixology Certification, like, being really somber and serious and still, like, funny, too. And then Atlanta, and that just, I don't understand how he is, like, good at everything. I would like him to not be good at something to make
it's very hard to display several kinds of humor.
James Franco is yeah. white Donald Glover.
I don't really know who James Franco is.
Sorry. Wait a second. I feel like he's as talented as Donald Glover.
You guys know I don't movie.
I was trying to invoke Childish. He's got a line in one of his songs where he says something like he won't stop until someone says James Franco is a white dog lover. So I was trying to like summon him, I guess.
Sorry to ruin that movie.
As a random aside, I prefer Dave Franco, aka Mr. Allison Brie, to James Franco.
That's so funny.
That's another story for another day. So we have listener questions, and I love this listener question, so I'm really excited about this. So Jeffrey Malone asks, if the hosts don't reveal their own personal best Halloween costumes, I'll be very disappointed. So, what was your personal best or favorite Halloween costume? I'm trying to think.
I think I've only really had like one quality one, but then there's one that I also like, so I'll do two. Okay. One is I think what we wore last year to your party.
Oh,
yeah. I was going to say that one too.
Oh. So we were both a spider person, yes. Also wearing like nice fancy clothes over it. So like
we were the Spider-Man, but like SPY.
We're cute, right? But also the other one I liked up until that point. Okay, there's two more. Man, I love the costume. Also as a suit, but I just wore a big cat head, black cat.
That one I remember.
And then I have this like hoodie that I have a reflective mask. I wore the reflective mask and the hoodie. That one I think was nice and creepy. Wore that to work. They didn't like it. It was great.
I mean, it's perfect for 2020 though, right? Like for Halloween.
It feels like some sort of political statement. Okay. I wore it now.
Danielle?
Well, he's not my favorite current day costume, but my favorite costume memory is back when I was obsessed with Barney and I had a full body Baby Bop costume complete with the head.
What?
And when I tell you, I was obsessed. I will not take that costume off for anybody.
Guys, we have to shut down the podcast. I just learned that my wife is a furry.
Thomas, do you have favorites?
Yeah, I had only recently started celebrating Halloween because my family ain't played it.
Judgment House.
I'm inspired by Danielle to say favorite Halloween memory, and then I'll say my favorite costume.
Oh my gosh, are you going to talk about my party?
No.
Wow, sorry. Conceited.
No, sorry. I was like, man, that's my favorite memory of Thomas from Halloween parties.
That tracks. My favorite Halloween memory is actually when my mom convinced my dad for us to go trick-or-treating. It was the first time we'd ever did so. And it was super last minute. And I was so grateful to my mom. So we took our pillowcases. And then I had like a straw hat. Put it on my head, and I was Woody from Toy Story, and we walked the neighborhood. But my favorite Halloween costume was at your party.
Are you talking about the
when I dressed up like Eric Killmonger?
Yes, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, with the hair dangling everywhere.
And then you had to get the game from Party City because they wouldn't give you a refund on the wig.
That's true.
Two or 3 years ago now.
Yes. So I went to Party City to buy a wig because I didn't grow out my hair at the time.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to be Killmonger from Black Panther. And yeah, I originally bought a wig and the person told me, yes, it's returnable. I was like, all right, cool. I came back. I was like, hey, not open. Here you go. They're like, we don't know what you're talking about. There is no return policy. I was like, but the guy at the front, they're like, no.
Now, so, real Killmonger would have handled that differently.
You're right. It would have shot him, probably.
Yep.
No, he'd been like, oh, but who brought you your coffee?
The wig was so elaborate that my friends, Ethan and Danielle, didn't initially know who I was.
It was?
Yeah.
I think for my year probably that was the year that I was Miss Universe. The year before that I was the year before that I was a Pawnee Goddess. And that one, I think, is still one of my favorite ones to, like, adult Halloween costumes that I've done, because it was, like, really fun.
That sounds crazy.
That sounds weird, but it was fun to, like, assemble all of, like, the little patches and things like that.
I remember that costume.
Yeah, that was the year. I don't know, maybe that was the year that Thomas drank the punch that
Thomas got drunk. Yes.
You were not supposed to drink.
Almost was not the word there.
Sorry about that.
It was very tasty.
It was very yummy. It just had a lot of alcohol in it. And then I think when I was a kid, I was talking about this with friends recently. So I grew up north, where in October, it's like in Pennsylvania, it was cold. So my mom would make us put on jackets before we'd go out trick-or-treating because it's dark and cold. And I was so upset one year because I was Jasmine. And I did not want to put a coat over it because I was like, Mom, no one will know who I am. And she's like, you can either put a coat on, put a turtleneck under it, or don't go trick-or-treating. So I opted for the turtleneck. That was the, I remember this very vividly. It was a white turtleneck and it had like the blue, like her blue, like little outfit. And I was, that was the thing to appease me because I was like, but now I'm
did you have the braid?
Jasmine?
No, I don't think I went that far. I think that it was just like the little like jewelry and the blue kind of outfit. I don't even think it was like a two piece. I think it was just like one, like a onesie basically.
That tracks.
But I loved that because Jasmine was like one of my favorite things growing up. And then our last listener question before we dive into all of the episodes themselves, and we'll talk about them as we talk about the episodes, is which one of the Halloween episodes is your favorite?
Season 2.
Yeah, epidemiology for me as well.
I don't know. I like all of them. That's mm-hmm. cheating. But like, I think just watching these three back to back, I think the last one. The
paranormal parentage one.
Yeah.
Ooh, fascinating. Seven horror fiction and seven spooky steps is my favorite. And I know that epidemiology is not everyone's, but like it's a big favorite because it is so great. To be clear, I love all of them, but there's just something because they're all very different. And we'll talk about this. Like epidemiology is a zombie episode. Horror fiction and seven spooky steps is them telling scary stories. And then it's like a haunted house episode. So it has kind of all of the different types of scary things. I just am very partial to the everyone telling stories because it's just very funny to hear everyone's obviously telling stories and their voices are coming through like the radio and things like that. But since epidemiology is in season 2, and actually, so we're recording this not in October, but this will be airing on October 28th, which is the 10-year anniversary of the day that Epidemiology aired, which is crazy.
It's been that long.
It's been 10 years. Yes.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that old.
Happy 10-year anniversary, Epidemiology. So the episode was written by Carrie Dornetto. And the plot summary, your very quick plot summary, is that there's a Halloween party at the school. The dean buys what he thinks is taco meat from the army, and a zombie outbreak occurs. And basically, the entire rest of the episode is a study group trying to survive a zombie episode. The quote that the community quote of the episode that I chose is, the army's going to be here in 6 hours. Why 6 hours? Are they hosting the Oscars? And obviously some good Jeff Snark. Although I do love Donald Glover's delivery of anything, including you punched a lady bee and Jeff still cool as a zombie.
Yes.
So it's super great. So I want to talk a little bit about the plot, obviously, of this episode, because it is a zombie episode. I feel like season 2, so this is pretty early in season 2, and as we talked about before on this podcast, season 2 was the season where they started to kind of break, obviously in modern warfare was kind of the thing that broke the box for them, is that they started to do crazier episodes and concept episodes after that. And season 2 starts to break the box so much when it comes to like this show. I mean, there's an entire stop motion animation episode in this season. There's a lot of things that happen. So, how does this episode work for everyone overall, especially those of you who said that this was your favorite Halloween episode?
I think the thing I liked about it most was that I felt like I could honestly believe how people would get taken in by zombies for the first time ever. It's like, most of these people, it's just happening. It just seems a little weird. But then, oh my goodness. But then your nerds come in and they're immediately on the zombies.
That's what's so funny is like, everyone else is like, oh yeah, yeah, some medical explanation. And then as soon as Troy and Abed come in, they're like, zombies! And then they know what's going on.
I don't remember if there are any before this, but outside of the paintball one, but I think it was the first episode that was like super over the top, but because of how well they catered to each of their personalities as part of the episode, it didn't feel like it was too much like all of season four did. It was very much just like, I could so easily believe that if there were a zombie outbreak at Greendale, this is exactly how it would happen. And it also had my all-time favorite Dean outfit. Showed up as Lady Gaga. I was like, yes, you better work that.
So many good Dean outfits.
Oh my goodness. I don't remember which episode we talked about it with when we were watching these, but he comes out with one where he's holding up like the sign or whatever.
Season four.
We saw that. We're like, we're a little mad because it's like, she does this and it's so strange. But he pulls it off. Like, and it's like, you want to say no, but like, look at him. You can't stop him.
Even his way when like the army men showed up, it's like, how did this fly?
I love it so much.
Ridiculous. And then what's the next one? He's the devil.
Yes, that one is really great.
Okay, I think it's so we're gonna have to figure out what the best Dean was of these three, but I can't do that
right now. All right, we're gonna have to, maybe we'll save that one for the end, like reflecting on it. What is the best Dean? Anyway. It's so true though, Danielle, like it's super believable that all of these characters would act the way that they did in a zombie like apocalypse. Like Chang is like, every man for himself, I'm locking all of you out. Jeff is just very cavalier. Britta, of course, gets bit and then never doesn't tell anyone because like, I'm special. And I love that so much. And I love that Rich comes back for this episode because it's one of
the best adapter, right?
He's Chiquita Banana MD. I've talked about this before because we talked about this with Asian population studies, which technically airs after epidemiology, but I love how much Jeff hates Rich. I just think it's funny. And he's so great and also was in happy endings. He like in this episode is really fun. And it's also fun to see all of the side characters like Leonard, like who's a pumpkin, and Leonard's the one that freaks everyone out, obviously.
You guys, where was Pop Pop? And if you're in this episode,
oh my god,
what costume would he wear?
Excuse me, his name is Magneto.
He would have been just his character from Harry Potter. He just would have been Lee Jordan. He just would have dressed up as Lee Jordan, and no one would have.
No, he would have been a boss.
Wait, was he Lee Jordan?
Yes, he was.
Nobody ever.
I love how many revelations we're having. Yes, he's actually really British, and he was Lee Jordan in here.
What?
You guys didn't know
Lee Jordan was so handsome.
Wow.
You stop being rude to Magneto. First, you don't know his name. I didn't say you're not handsome.
He was, yes. Sometimes I forget, but yes. Pop, pop. That's a good question. Where was Magneto during all of this? I love that, like, obviously Troy and Abed are the ones who know how to handle a zombie outbreak.
But are they really? Because at the end, Troy comes in ready to save everyone.
I mean, that also is one of the funniest things, though, is that, like, of course, in a zombie movie, like, that would be how everyone gets saved. But the realistic part of, like, him being like, oh, okay, I've been bit. You can stop now.
Like, can I tell you, like, I thought it was going to work. I definitely thought it was going to work. Like,
he thought
I
that like, he was going to, oh, like,
perfect. He's
going to
put the costume back on and he has protection from the zombies.
Yeah.
And then they kept attacking. And I was like, wait, what? And then
he just like gives up. Yeah.
I thought he was going to survive because they made that other call to like, you know, you can't die first, yeah. You're black. And like, okay, so I was like, all right, he's gonna make it. And then Dan Harmon was like, nope.
No,
I mean, no, he made it. He didn't did. Die first. He made it to the end, but he chose to be mm-hmm. here. He came back.
Yeah. Which I love. Right. And I love that. Well, and it's really fun because it's like nice to see a little bit of the Troy and Abed dynamic of like why Troy wants to be perceived as cool. And then of course, obviously we, Donald Glover like is a very attractive human being. And so
it's
like,
mince words here, guys.
So like, it's funny though, because Abed gets him to reveal like, okay, I didn't want people thinking that I was a nerd. And so I have to be cool. But really the thing that like saves him toward the end is them being nerds and knowing about how zombie movies end and how to save things. And obviously like, yes, he does end up switching the thermostat down. But I love that like this episode gave Troy, cause I talk about this a lot. Like in season two, they start to prime Troy for being like the leader of the study group and like having a heart of gold. And this is a fun episode to see Troy actually like step up. One of my favorite, cause like, this is our next like thing is like, what's your favorite moment, joke or scene in the episode? I don't know why this is always my favorite scene, but the scene where Troy, Abed and Jeff are in the basement and there's a cat that keeps like, I don't know why it's so funny that the cat just keeps flying across the screen and just like, hold on, back burner, we got to deal with this cat, and like chases a cat. It makes no sense, but it is one of my favorite things because again,
it's like, why is that so funny? It's like, it's an Aliens reference, but then it just keeps being a thing.
It's because Troy at the end, okay, who keeps throwing cats? I died when they said that.
It's so good. I love it a whole lot because
My favorites were everything Troy. Yes. Like everything Troy, just like, oh, I'm ripped under this. I'm a sexy Dracula. I don't need to know which Dracula. Every one of his reactions, it was just, he was the funniest. He was just the funniest bit of this whole thing.
Yeah. His, like, when he comes back at the end and starts punching everyone, like, and it's
his punches.
It's so funny, though, because obviously it's, like, very Troy. Like, Troy, like, punches Annie, and he's like, I don't know where you are, Shirley, and continues. And then, again, the Jeff still cool as a zombie thing is just so fun. But, honestly, anytime Troy was on screen in this episode.
Yes.
Mine was the armor, and then... only because of what it reminded me of, the ending when everybody, doesn't everybody get roofied at the party?
Well, they like get like...
That's what the story.
That's yeah. Explanation.
No, I know.
But like, they get like...
reminded me...
gassed or something like that. I don't know what
it is. It reminded me of when Annie, Abed, and Troy were trying to break into, I think a lawyer's office or something, and a security guard comes in and Annie... chloroforms
the janitor,
and then they wake up and he's like, they're like, everybody is chloroformed, and then he's like, wait, what chloroform in your hand, and then she chloroforms him again. So that's what that reminded
can
me
I
of.
Just say one, that is one of the funniest scenes I feel like in the entire show is Troy running around going, I don't know what to do, my whole brain is crying.
Yes. Yes.
And like Annie being like, we've talked about this before, but I love Annie because she goes from 0 to 60 like nobody's business. And so, like, of course, the solution is to chloroform the janitor. And then at the very end of the episode, she, like, I think Jeff is, like, about to go talk to Alan, and she has the chloroform bottle, and she just starts to shake it. And they're like, no. But in this one, it's fun because I like getting to see, one, all of the personalities are very in line. And also, who they are as zombies, too. Like, Troy and Abed do their little zombie handshake. Annie's off reading a book. Jeff's in a corner texting. Like, they're all still themselves, even when they're being zombies, which I found to be really funny. Also love the random George Takei voiceover at the very end of this episode. Solid.
I also learned how to pronounce his name in that episode.
I don't care if he says it himself. That's not how you pronounce it.
Do you think it's George Takei?
That's what my body tells me.
It's like, is it like the Rihanna thing? Is this
is she really Rihanna?
No, isn't she
Anna?
She's really Rihanna, but we all call her Rihanna.
She pronounces it Rihanna.
She does.
Sorry, the critics have voted.
And your name the critics meaning us.
Us.
Your name, girl.
My gosh. Yeah, I love... Also, can we just talk about the fact that the playlist that the dean has going on this entire episode?
The ABBA? Is that the ABBA soundtrack? Right?
It's an ABBA soundtrack and everything. Like, first of all, that now pre... Oh, well, hold on.
Pre-Mamma Mia
meant more, like, less to me than it does now. Because now I just think of Mamma Mia whenever I hear the songs. Because obviously, I'm pretty sure most or all of the songs that are in this episode are also in Mamma Mia. It's just so great. It's so great. Yeah. So this episode does set up a weird plot point for the rest of the season, of course, in the end tag. And... don't know how you feel about it, but I don't necessarily care for it. But Chang and Shirley, what do you guys think about this?
The most unnecessary plot point in this entire TV show, including season 4.
It's just the worst, because like everything with Chang, once he's not a teacher, is bad. And then Shirley is my least favorite of all those fools at the table. So let's just put them together and do stupidness. I'm just big, massive...
But you know what's funny is I really didn't catch it when I was watching that episode until like it came and got referenced back a couple of episodes later. And then I had to go and I was like, how did I miss this entire thing happening?
It's not really like a plot. Like it's briefly happening. Like it didn't need to be a thing that happened.
I would buy that if the post credits wasn't a voicemail reminding you.
Troy, why did he call me?
But I love that. That was his reaction. Why did he call me? Like,
everything.
Not what is happening.
About
like
that voicemail.
Not like what is just what did I just listen to? But like, why am I the one who has to hear about it? I've talked about this before. I think that Shirley was incredibly underserved as a character on the show. She barely got anything to do. And so that was also just a product, I think, of not having a lot of women in the writers' rooms. And she just kind of like got all of the side plots. And I really think that the pregnancy story was completely unnecessary. It didn't add anything to her story overall. And basically the show forgot about it when they wanted to forget
it's
about it.
It's just super weird.
It was weird that
like
it was
trying
to
that
like,
level of real in this show.
It
gave me some fun moments, like Troy trying to figure out the math. Him telling Peterson's. And then the moment where Chang shows up for Shirley when she's delivering a baby, he's telling her like the resilience of the Changs. I thought that was very sweet. But yeah, everything else before that, like I could have done without.
Yeah. I just feel like it doesn't, if it didn't add anything really to the show, except like giving us a few different plot lines for Shirley, again, seems like a really lazy plot for Shirley. Be like, right.
One black woman in the show cheat and then also get pregnant. Yeah. Let's have that be the one thing that defines her for a little bit.
Malcolm Jamal, after we take a break from her like leaving her marriage.
Yeah.
Cheated on her.
We talked about
this. I wanted her to leave.
Yeah, no. And that's what, I mean, we talked about this in our Asian Population Studies episode. We talked about this when we talked to Caitlin and Yumina. It just doesn't seem like the show cared enough about Shirley to like follow through with storylines or give her anything that wasn't directly related to baking or having kids. Like that was it. And especially because in season 1, she talks so much about how terrible her ex is, like, and what a terrible person. And it's like, it felt like one, they just cast Malcolm Jamal Warner and you're like, I guess we're supposed to believe that Shirley goes back to him because he's Malcolm Jamal Warner.
Yeah.
And look at how charming he is. But like, it didn't feel consistent.
He's in a Cosby sweater.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't feel consistent. And it just felt like a weird decision because they didn't really have the desire. Because there's a lot of stuff about Shirley that's just very interesting that the show doesn't really want to touch on.
Honestly, I think that's part of why I don't like it so much, because like it's not like they had no idea what to do. There are parts of her that are good. There's like a whole part of her that's not her bad Christianity stuff, mm-hmm. where she's got like a personality that's fun and she could do other things other than just try to reconcile that relationship and just be annoying.
Yeah.
But like they focus in all the wrong ways and it's a bummer.
Yeah, it really is. It continues to be a bummer to me because, again, we learn like in a couple seasons in the season 4 Christmas episode that she's like on the valedictorian track. I'm like, why didn't, like, what? Like, okay.
Where did this
like,
come from?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you clearly like care about her and you're not like, and she makes the reference like, oh, are you thinking like I couldn't be valedictorian? And I'm like, but you gave literally like in season 3, there's a reference that Jeff tells her you can't have baking things as an identity. And yet the show is like, but baking things is her identity. And it just felt like very, like this Chang and Shirley storyline just feels
bad lampshading.
Yeah, incredibly unnecessary. Well, and also because I feel like they didn't really have any idea what to do with either of these characters in season 2. They were like, Chang's no longer a teacher, so we don't really know what to do with him. Although I would argue that this season does the best job of figuring out what Chang can do, and he's just trying to get into the study group. It goes a little bit off the rails the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That was a good thing for his character to be.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense because, you know, like he wants to be part of a group. He doesn't really have anyone else in his life. So that kind of makes sense. Like Chang would want to be part of these people that he kind of already knows. He would like to.
And also friends. Like it makes sense on the story level too. It's just like, hey, we've got this Chang guy.
Mm-hmm.
We need him to stay with the group that the show is based on. So his character wants to stay with.
Yeah. But it feels like they didn't really have any idea what to do with the two of them. So instead of doing nothing with them, they were like, let's have them hook up in a zombie episode, I guess. And then like make him maybe the father of Shirley's baby. And then it's just like, but that's not the story I want for either of these characters, really. You're giving me something, but it's not what I feel like you could be giving. Because again, go back to this a lot. This is a show that could do so many things so covertly, so fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Abed helps someone give birth, like, you know, like Abed's delivering a baby in the background. There's, and we'll talk about this in the next episode. When we talk about the next episode, there's a Beetlejuice gag that they spent a couple of seasons, like realizing that they could pull off. There's so many fun, like little nuanced things that it feels just like it was on purpose then that they were like, we don't know what to do
with these other things were more important.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So, and it kind of sucks because that is also a product of the writers and behind the scenes and all of that jazz. So, yeah, not a fan of the Chang and Shirley. Do love that, as is customary for Shirley in the first 2 seasons, has an ambiguous Halloween costume. I did love that little moment of them, of Jeff being like, I can only see that right now. Only see Miss Piggy.
I totally guess, Glenda. I was so proud of myself.
I am really proud of you.
Oh, thank you. But one thing was truly like, I think I would like her character so much more if she just didn't have that fake high-pitched voice and then alter to that. If she was like the other personality, just like all the time, more like even-killed voice and sometimes shifted into that. Versus like the Dr. Jekyll, Mrs. Hyde, that works, thing that they have going on.
Yeah.
I think I would enjoy her as a character so much more. Like if she said, Brita.
Oh my gosh. I want to kill myself.
It's in one of the episodes where Jeff goes, hard to break yes into lilting syllables, isn't it? And she goes, yes. tries to do it. Or no, or I can't remember what he breaks, but he like challenges her to do that.
The word he's trying to find is sassy. And I hope he doesn't find her.
He better pray he doesn't find it. Also, great episode written by our lovely friend Megan Gans. So epidemiology, I love that it ends. Obviously, this plot point doesn't die. It gets picked back up in the next episode, next Halloween episode. And the consequences of it occur throughout the rest of the show, obviously, because of the Chang Shirley thing. Any final thoughts on this episode before we move into the season 3 Halloween?
So zombies just exist in this universe, and we're just going to skate past that.
Would you like to unpack that?
I have nothing to unpack. It's just that apparently that was just secret government zombie meat, and it was just there, and they collected it and cured people and left, and this is just...
It's a thing that happens in Greendale, Colorado. Ooh.
Apparently. There it is. Okay. On to the next one.
All right. And on that note, Horror Fiction in Seven Spooky Steps is written by Dan Harmon. It contains basically this following plot. So the study group is going to go to a Halloween dance where the dean is serving taco meat. Nice callback. And instead, Britta decides to tell Jeff that for her psych class, she ran some tests and discovered that one of the study group members has homicidal tendencies. Her idea as to figure out which one of those study group members it is to have everyone sit around and tell scary stories. All right. And so basically the study group gets a chance to tell their own versions of scary stories throughout the episode. My community quote of the episode is from Britta herself, where she goes, "Wait, people using my name to mean make a small mistake." And then Jeff goes, "Yes."
That was the correct quote.
You Britted it. I also do love that they... we've talked about this. I love Britta. I just hate that the show dumps her down.
Her?
Yeah, I hate that the show doesn't. Thank you, Ethan. Thank you for saying it. The show does not love her. They dumb her down so much. This episode was really fun. This is my favorite Halloween episode because I love the idea of telling scary stories. As someone on Twitter pointed out, they use the same cabin for every scary story. They just use it in different frames. It's very different though from a zombie episode. So what are all of your initial thoughts on this episode?
I like it a lot more than the previous one. This would be my favorite, I think, but it's not. And you can tell it's better than the last one because it has a Jeff speech at the end. So
yeah. Where is that the criteria?
that's a real community episode. As a Jeff speech. Like, you know it.
That's true.
I was surprised it was so normal. Like, it was abnormal, but they put the abnormal in a space meant for abnormal. And so it felt like we were kind of, the absurdity of it didn't stand out because they kind of like gave their characters permission to be that way in a way that did not feel like that whole like out of the box that epidemiology did.
It wasn't real in their world. They were all clearly telling stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's my favorite. Like Abed's story.
Interesting. Like tell me more.
His description, like his scenario.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I meant. No, oh, okay. I knew immediately after I said it.
Interesting. That's your favorite Abed story. No, I get that.
Mine would be the stock motion or whatever it's called.
Oh gosh, Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas.
Yeah, just Abed's reasoning, perfect. And also, when he said interior in a cabin, I thought about cabin in the woods, and that made me laugh.
I fully agree with you, Danielle. I think this is why this episode works for me, is like, it's not so out of the box. Like, it just gives the characters the chance to do something a little bit more absurd, but none of it feels like it's takes place outside of the realm of Greendale. This one and the next one definitely feel like they're just the characters being put in these situations and circumstances where they express their personalities, which is my favorite thing probably about this episode, is that all of the stories are very indicative of the characters that are telling them. So that's what makes it so fun, is that it's not just like the scenes being written for them. And like in epidemiology, of course, like the characters are basically reacting to things that are happening. But in this episode, they're creating the things that are happening, which I think gives a whole new layer of fun. And as Annie being one of my favorite characters,
ooh, that was
ever, her story is one of my favorite things in Annie's like entire arc in the show is this moment of her telling the really scary story.
She has some darkness in her.
See, that's what I love about her. She goes like from 0 to 60. Also, what's really fun about this is that, like, I was trying to think as I was first watching it. I mean, they kind of allude to it, is like, are the characters assuming that they are themselves in the stories? And like, do they get the hint that certain characters are supposed to be certain people? And that starts to pick up as the scary stories get like unwoven, is like, Pierce is like, wait a second. Pierce, right, yeah. Exactly. Pierce is like, wait, why am I this person? Where was Jeff in that story? And I like that. Like, I like that about this episode, is that the characters all kind of have their own spin on things. But I love that Annie just is like, I love that Troy line of like, stop pinning ribbons to her. Like, she gets to be good at everything.
That's how I feel about Donald Glover.
My gosh. Seriously, though. Us to Donald Glover. But yeah, no, I love that all of the, so let's talk about that then. What does each scary story tell about the character, say about the character that's telling it? I want to hear thoughts.
It confused me just because, like, I feel like Shirley doesn't keep the same energy. Like, we found out that she used to be a drunk. But like, her Halloween scenario made it seem like she doesn't know what drugs are. Like, where it's just so over the top to mm-hmm. me. And that's just what I thought about. I just thought about that episode where we found out that, like, her going around being like, you don't know me, or the door yeah. having her being on it, and then her like having the scenario where Britta is pouring weed on her. It's just, I don't know. But besides that, I feel like, not even Annie, though. That shocked me, because I thought I knew where it was going. And then she turned into a werewolf and started describing the optic nerve being so tight. I was like, jeez. So
my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing because, like, she also is one of the, and it's a really interesting, I don't think Dan Hartman meant to go this far, but whatever, I'll take it this far. Like, this commentary on, like, her obviously feeling like having anger and like having those feelings. I think that everyone sees Annie as like, oh, like this perfect type A student, but like, Jeff wronged her and screwed her over, like, basically since, you know, throughout season two, that's where she's at. And then in season three, she's still carrying some of that. And so, like, the idea that like, I mean, in Paradigm, she finds out that, like, Jeff and Britta are sleeping together. So she's, you know, this isn't so far removed from that. Like, it's, I mean, a couple episodes in the lineup of things. But I think that it's really funny because Annie, one, her story is very indicative because Troy calls it out, and like, she has to be the best. So she has to like put a twist in there, because scary stories, like, something that's good to her has to have something that's unexpected. But also, it's completely unexpected for the group to think this like cardigan wearing proper type A student would have so much anger and rage that she would literally turn into a werewolf and devour the selfish vampire. But like, Annie does go 0 to 60, and when she wants to like win something, whether or not there's a prize involved, she does. And so I think that that's interesting. I agree with you though about the Shirley thing. Like, the Shirley, it kind of goes back to the show not knowing how to write her. Like, Troy literally says, like, that's not a scary story. That's a sermon. Like, so, like, this idea of, like, she swings from, obviously, the group finding out in season two that she, like, used to, like, frequent bars, and then her being this, like, holier-than-thou judgy Christian. It feels in line with what the show thinks Shirley should think and believe, but, I mean, as we've already said, and I will continue to say, I've wanted more from Shirley. And from her writing specifically.
I don't know. It seems like all the characters are not actually reflecting who they are, but what they want to be. And Shirley's mm-hmm. always trying to hide her bad self and pretend she's better than she is. It happens in the next episode we watched.
Yeah.
When she sees the sex dungeon and she's just mm-hmm. like, oh, tell it. Don't tell anyone I knew what that was. Mm-hmm. It's just her pretense. That's consistent. I don't think those sides of her are any kind of problem. Yeah. It's just she hides it and pretend she's not that.
Yeah, that's fair. I did like Abed's because of how logical Abed's was, and I also like Britta's because of how Britta is just so flippantly telling the story. I love, this is one of my favorite things though about like New Girl, is when they're doing flashbacks, they interject over each other's flashbacks. So for like Community, of course, like, their scary stories aren't going to be these perfectly written stories. They're going to be Yeah, there's a guy with a hook for a hand, you know, the thing, like, and basically her explaining, like, you can hear Britta, like, trying to explain what that means.
Absolutely.
And then Abed humming Daybreak is, well,
I was about to ask, is that the first
Daybreak,
time,
like, is it? Oh. We probably don't have, well.
I thought you guys were going to keep doing that for a bit.
Well, I was like, Chelsea, I'm like, Chels, I don't know if that's, we don't have the rights to, we don't have to sing words, right?
I like Abed's a lot. I feel, yeah. I like that his nerdiness and his specific way of thinking and his genre savviness in his story, it turns him into something resembling a competent, appropriate human. Like, this is what you would want to be, right? This is, my nerdiness is useful. See? Or whatever.
It's all 911 with this fully charged cell phone. Yes. Stand in the middle of the room with knives.
Holding back to back, holding knives.
And like I loved eventually.
Eventually. I loved her, like, or like the description of Britta of like, yes, I'm comforted by your shiny hair and facial symmetry. Like, and that's also just, again, very, like, no one would, like, turn on the broadcast right to the correct moment. Right, so, of course, we're going to let the song play out. Which is funny because, like, Abed knows so much about scary movies that you might expect him to just recall, like, a movie plot for you. But instead, it's just Abed telling how he would tell a scary story, which is very Abed-like. And, like, it has all the components of a scary story just with the interjection of Abed's personality.
He's so funny. I forgot. I think he was like, do you want to kiss again? Or Britta's like, do you want to kiss again? And he's like, no. And then he just keeps going with the rest of that show. But so, whenever he talked about, like, who's kissed who, I've always wondered, like, when does Abed come into play? Like, this kiss everyone remembers. And so this brought it back.
I was always thinking, I literally watched that scene and I was like, who on this show has kissed whom? Like, at this point, and that was like what I was thinking of. I was like, oh, Abed and Britta, not really Britta.
Yeah, we were trying to track that the other day. Like, if you can connect a line through all the characters through kisses.
Can you?
Abed ever
kissed? No, we got distracted.
Yeah, I love that this all, first of all, again, call back to the first, from the very beginning of this episode, gosh, Britta being so earnest. I think that that's one of the things that always, she just tries so hard. And in season 3, she's really committing to being a psych major. And she's just like, yes.
I hate this entire part of her.
I was about to ask her, how do you feel about her psych
about
major
Britta
thing?
Being
because
a psych
like,
major?
Sometimes I think it's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd ever say it like works for me, but sometimes I think it works for the show.
They get so obnoxious with it that it's just like, I have like an aversion to the entire idea. Like with the whole thing, I think it was in season 3, or maybe season 4 with the whole like helping Jeff find his dad. I was like, butt out. Holy.
Yeah. I mean, I waffle back and forth. Like it's weird with the shows and the majors. I feel like for being set at a community college, I really don't, besides Jeff, know like what all of these people are even here for. Do we ever find out, like, what Troy's supposed to be studying? Like, I'm just...
I think he just ultimately does the air conditioning thing. But
I guess
he has something before then.
Like, before that. Not really. So, like, Abed obviously is doing film. Annie, we don't even really learn until, like, a little bit, like, what she's... And she switches her major. She does
that. And then it makes no sense. The whole, like, forensic science.
Yeah.
Where did that come from, Annie?
I've talked about this before. I'm not quite sure what Greendale's course catalog looks like based on what all of these characters are studying. Like, Jeff's studying pre-law. Shirley's going to be an entrepreneur, so she's studying business. There's apparently an air conditioning repair annex. There's some sort of criminology. Yeah, I'm like, there's some sort of, like, other backgrounds. Like, I don't...
They all get degrees in something. Like, when Jeff leaves and he comes back, they've all left with stuff at that.
They did.
I don't know what they all were.
Yeah, it's interesting because Britta being, like, a psych major, I think, is a way for her to, like, try and find purpose in the idea of butting into other people's lives. Like,
she's helping while being nosy.
Yeah. So like, that's a good way, like, for her to give unsolicited advice and be like, well, I'm a psych major. And I think that's probably the easiest way for her. I don't know that I would have expected, like, as a character, Britta to pursue that. I just don't know what I would have expected her to actually pursue. I don't know.
Some BS major, like interdisciplinary studies or something.
Yeah. Like, ultimately, like, that's what I feel like Britta is. I don't know. Her trajectory kind of aims that way. And yeah, for her in this episode being like, her psych, I feel like they lean really hard on that when they need to lean really hard on that platform. Yeah. And it's probably the hardest that they lean, besides Jeff being a lawyer, on any person's one individual academic study. But I feel like for Britta's character, again, they kind of just didn't know. And maybe for them, like, the irony of the joke of, like, isn't it so funny that Britta is a psych major and she's, like, so dumb she doesn't know how to put a Scantron into a machine? Like, I don't know
when she changed, because so I started to rewatch Community again from season one. Mm-hmm. And I'm only like maybe 5 or 6 episodes in. But I'm already missing who I thought Britta was going to be based off of the beginning of the show. So I'm really wondering, like, when did this shift happen?
I have theories.
This, like, blonde airhead.
I have theories. I think that what ended up happening, and y'all, I would love to hear everyone else's thoughts about this, because this is something I think about a lot. I loved Britta when the show first started. I think that, I don't remember what season it's in, but it's not a spoiler if it's past where, no, it might've been season 4. So I think you're good. Or Jess says, you seem smarter when I first met you, to Britta. And it's just kind of like, oh, even the show knows that they, like, dumbed her down. I feel like once the show didn't pursue, like, the Jeff Britta romance, they didn't really know what to do with her.
I would agree with that.
And it really sucks, because, like, that shouldn't be the thing that defines or doesn't define her, but it somehow ends up being the thing where, like, I think after they broke off that part of her personality of, like, being, you know, having a relationship with Jeff, they just didn't really know what to do with her. And I don't like what they did with her, honestly.
Wait, following right off that, how do you feel about this, the half-hearted relationship the show tries to give her and Troy?
Also completely unnecessary.
Okay. I think that I could have been on board with it had the show given it more ramp up and had actually, like, followed through with it and had intended to follow through with it. Cause it could have been really compelling. They have some good moments in, like, season 1, like when they have their little dance, when they're singing dance together and things like that. I don't feel
Remedial
like they gave
chaos theory. They had some nice moments together then.
Yes.
The documentary episode in season 3, mm-hmm. where they were just hugging and it was like, cut. I thought that was sweet. But yeah, in season 4, I just was like,
I don't feel like they gave me enough, like, lead up to believe that I should be. And also, like, I don't remember who we were talking about this with, but the idea of, like, did the show even tell us, like, why they're interested in each other? Like,
no.
So that was
there.
Yeah. And they're not Jeff and Annie, so who else do we have? Not Pierce. I guess Shirley, again, I just have so many problems with it. Well, Shirley is the mom. Like, and again, they make that point so often that, like, I'm only 2 years older than Jeff. Like, but yeah, I think that they, and with Abed, we've talked about this before, and I hate they did this with Abed, of, like, this idea of Abed's abnormal or atypical, therefore romance, shrug, we don't want to give him any of that. And the show really,
hey, I don't think that's fair. I like his little brief relationships are better than Troy and Britta. Get out of here, Kochek girl.
The deaf girl where he learned sign language for, that was like one of the Britta after that.
I don't think that's part of episodes I've seen.
Yeah, I don't
think, so I no, think that's that later in season 5.
Really?
No. Are we? I'm trying to think.
Because the only romance I know of all that having is Kochek Girl.
Yes.
Where he dated Captain Marvel briefly.
I was going to say, yes. We must call her by her proper name. Brie Larson.
Also, him with Annie, they have chemistry. Like with Abed the paintball. Yeah, the paintball episode. Like,
I mean, Abed can have chemistry with anybody.
I think they made Annie the point on the show. With
everybody. Allison Brie has chemistry with everyone.
Well, Annie's the only girl that the show likes.
I mean, and I would argue even then, sometimes the show doesn't really like her because they don't know.
Well, no, they like her, but then they sexualize her because that's the only way they know how to like her.
There we go. Ethan,
it's not a good like.
It's not a good like. I think that, well, and Danny and Allison are really close in real life. So I think that their chemistry played off of the fact that they're actually close friends. So, but yeah, no, I just don't understand what happened to Britta, but I would firmly believe that it's because the show, once the show was like, well, Jeff and Britta aren't going to really be a thing. What do we do with this blonde? We've got a brunette. So I guess they don't like each other and one of them will be dumb and one of them will be smart. Like, it just, I don't know. It felt like that was the consequence of.
If you ever don't know what to do, like you're like, oh, I don't know what to do for this podcast anymore. You take a brief hiatus where you do like a serial style recreation of like the hunt for what happened to Britta's character.
Okay.
Try to track it down. See
exactly. What happened. Well, and it's hard because it's hard to pinpoint the moment that it fell apart. Cause like, it kind of feels like it starts to happen gradually. I love in season one that she's like jaded and cynical, but she also thinks that things like putting tiny sombreros on frogs are funny. Like, that's just who she is as a person. That's not her being dumb. That's not her being like, I don't know how to put a Scantron in a machine, or like, I don't know what an analogy is. Like, that's just her sense
of humor. Personal weirdness.
Yeah. Which I love. But then again, yeah, I think that the show did a disservice to her when they were like, so she's not a love interest. What is she? ? A psychologist? But a dumb
exactly
one?
How they said it.
That's,
I bet.
That's literally the writer's room at that very moment in time.
Did you have a tape recording? What?
I actually did. That's a real conversation that happened in the writer's room. A screenshot of the whiteboard too. We talked about this again in our episode with Caitlin Humina, but it feels like sometimes they were just like, with Britta, they were like, what do we know about feminists? They yell. And I was like, leather jacket? ? Like, it feels like that's just what they wrote on the board. Just like, I don't know. What? Oh,
that would explain her and Troy, because it's a diversity thing.
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, they're two, it just, with Britta and Troy, it felt like they're two people who are there, and the only two people besides, the only people we've got left are Jeff, Annie. We'll do our own thing with them. Britta and Abed, and obviously like Shirley and Pierce, like, so that's not a real thing. Well, Troy and Britta. But I feel like I could have liked them if they would have actually taken the time to get me to buy into them, but then they were together and over so quickly. It was like, oh.
While also doing this whole thing to just continue to emphasize that they were not having sex. And
yeah,
that whole deal was weird. It was like, Troy is just mature enough to be in a relationship, but completely immature to be able to talk about or do.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is not working out here.
No.
I thought that was just a line for Shirley in the Paranormal Parentage, where he's like, we didn't do everything or whatever. There was like a moment where it was like very quick, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Playing fast and loose with his innocence.
But speaking of Troy and bringing us back to the Halloween episode, his was my favorite story just because he was just so pure and sincerely Troy.
Was that the sewing the butt on the chest? Yes.
So pure.
Troy and Abed having
together.
Yes.
Oh my
god.
Got
that joke when he was saying the ESP and he's like, why don't y'all say something? The fact that like they were just thinking it.
I love it.
Go ahead.
When you know that ending when the Troy and Abed sew together, did you watch that? Like, look at it and look at Troy, because he looks at you like he looks dead at you. I challenge you. Go after we're done with this. Right. Go watch the episode. Watch the end.
He made me do it yesterday, and I felt so unsettled in my soul afterwards.
Because like she was watching Abed, and so I was like, "Oh, you missed it. We're going again." We watched. She's like, "What?"
Oh, I don't think that I have noticed that. I'll be unsettled.
Yeah, I'd rather not do that.
Yeah,
I believe you.
My favorite was definitely Annie's, though. I don't know.
Oh my gosh. It's so good.
Yeah, because I thought it was going to be like a Beauty and the Beast thing.
Well, that's the whole point.
Where she teaches him how to read, and then she turns into a werewolf.
She's I think that my favorite thing. Well, and obviously, because again, this goes back to like at the end of the storytelling, everyone knows that everyone else is being included in this. So, clearly, Jeff and Britta know that they're the characters in the story. And Britta being like, I'm okay with this. Like, it has a character. And then her being like, I'm going to teach you. I'm going to make you better. That's like what we expect from Annie to Jeff at this point. It's like, but I'll make you better. And like him being the monster. The funniest thing to me then is her subversion of that trope, which is, oh, joke's on you, buddy. And like watching Joel McHale's face as Jeff and like all of the characters that they pan over to, especially Shirley with her clutching her bag. Ugh. It's just so funny because Annie's the person we're not conditioned to think is that. I loved her twist though, that she's like so invested in scary storytelling.
I might be a little biased in my preference for that one because just finished watching Interview with a Vampire for the first time. And what was it last week? Thomas and I were watching Underworld. So
I'm on a whole vampire. I got a vampire kick. But it's a good one. Well, and it's also fun because all of the scary stories are different versions of scary stories too. Like it's, you know, you've got like the supernatural kind of scary stories and you've got like the
human centipedes.
Yeah. And you've got and what's real fun at the end. So obviously, Ethan, you already mentioned the fact that Jeff tries to give a winger speech at the very end. Everyone gets a little freaked out over the fact that like Britta's making, like they find out why Britta's making them tell scary stories. We're purposely avoiding Pierce's story. I'm just not going to even touch that.
I'm not going to lie.
Truly scary.
That was one of the funniest things I've seen we're not going to talk about it.
You can talk about it. I don't. I don't like Pierce, so I just avoid Pierce.
His zipper and smack.
Oh my gosh, you do have to acknowledge
also,
that.
Also, Troy's reference, like the fact that Pierce knows about don't drink juice in the hood, like in South Central, like that the parody of it, the fact that he's dressed up like Marlon Wayans' character from that movie, that made me laugh a lot. And then the unzip and him smacking his penis, like smacking Troy was funny. I didn't get who Abed was supposed to be, if that was a reference to anything. I got a lot of laughs from that whole segment. The fact that the girls end up being like his like girls. He's like, who can count to 30?
I was waiting to see what word you were going to use.
I didn't know what to say, and I didn't want to say anything crazy.
I mean, I will say,
spinning in his mind.
I feel like out of all of the scary stories, that was the one where everyone looks the most horrified after. Like, even with Annie's, not everyone was as horrified as they were by the end of Pierce's story. We'll give him that. But obviously, this episode's focus is the fact Go.
We need to double back. I know we already covered it once, but
rewind.
Shirley's story must be pointed out for the dean. Please do. For the dean. Just for the dean, just to recognize the dean. Second dean, Dean Watch of the night.
Oh, what was her?
She was the devil one.
Oh, yeah.
Chainsawed them to bits.
Oh my gosh. All right. I just
that. And they're like, okay, can we go to heaven now? And
that she's
like,
is, no.
I'm going to go to Abraham's bosom now. Like, what the crap?
I do love any reference that the show makes to Britta living in New York. It's like New York.
Just like New York.
It's like New York out there. It is the only scary story that got to have the dean in it. So clearly, like, that's a nice little win for Dean Pelton. He doesn't get to be in any of the other scary stories. Chang gets to be in the final not scary story that Jeff tries to bond the group together by. Obviously, the whole point, it was, okay, but it was really funny to me. Wasn't it so funny how in his version, they're all wearing Christmas sweaters and it's a cozy Christmas cabin and look at how happy everyone is. And he just wants
why you murder people.
Jeff, why are you always getting us to try and put down our weapons, essentially?
It's like, the fact that Troy fashions Wolverine claws.
Like, Shirley breaks a bottle on the table. Pierce has a fire extinguisher. Annie's got a pair of scissors. I love that.
Did Abed have a weapon?
That's a good question. Did I watch closely enough to notice that?
I don't know.
Well, that's a good question. I might have to go back. Someone's going to correct me because most people listen to this know all of the things about Community.
Like, cool, at 19 minutes, 51
seconds. Exactly. So didn't you notice that Abed was doing this? My favorite thing about winger speeches is when they don't work. I love a good winger speech to take us home where no one really buys into it. And this is one of the best ones because Jeff's like, let me tell a story. And then they realize that Jeff decided not to tell everyone. He just Christmas treed the Scantron. Also just hearing the word Scantron, those
coming back.
And it
brought me back. Right there. Memories of filling in Scantrons. So obviously, yes, everyone gets freaked out. It's Halloween. Jeff tries to soothe everyone with a calming Christmas story about why someone would want to murder them, and it's Chang. No one buys into it. Everyone has their weapons. Then they learn that Jeff decided not to tell them, that he just decided to randomly fill out the Scantron. Which also, yes, Jeff, you've been listening to these stories for how long? Could you not have said something? It's fine. It's Jeff.
We have the same thought. Don't worry.
It's cool. He just wanted to see. I think Jeff sometimes just wants to see what will happen. Like, how far will this go? And then I'll stop it, but not until I'm satisfied with how far it's going.
Okay, they have to come in a position to save the day.
That's true.
I think my favorite Winger speech is his speech about speeches. Like, in the montage.
Yes.
The montage.
I've given a lot of speeches.
Right, exactly. I think that's my favorite Winger speech.
And at the very end of this episode, obviously Annie recognizes that Britta put in the Scantrons upside down. And so she decides to remedy the Scantrons. And there's only one person in the group who apparently is normal. So I wanted to get your thoughts on how this episode ends. Were you surprised by Britta's psych evaluation?
I thought Britta was going to be the crazy one. I didn't expect that everybody was crazy except Abed.
Ditto. Actually, I thought the same exact thing.
No, I assumed also that it would be Britta, but then when it's like, oh, everyone's crazy, who's the same one? Of course it's Abed. Mm-hmm. Because even the show knows that Abed is the best character. So it's like, let's just all be real here.
I liked that it was all varying degrees of like what you would expect people like. Annie's got some. Jeff has quite a bunch. Yeah, Jeff has quite a bunch. Pierce has a lot. and then everyone else is kind of varying. And then, like, yes, Abed, the character that we're presumed by the show or by the characters in the show to think is the most absurd or out there, has one foot out of reality, is actually the one who is the most sane. I mean, although we don't know the psych evaluation, he could have like just filled out what he knew were the like right answers. I don't know. Like, it doesn't really matter. Also, I wanted to point out something that not everyone points out that I forget about often, which is that we always harp on Britta and people using Britta's name to mean a mistake. But at the end of this episode, it turns out it's not only Britta that they're using.
That was so great.
Yeah. So I was kind of curious about that because I was like, oh, right. They use Abed and Pierce's. Yeah.
Right.
Pierce's name to like mean something, to have some sort of meaning beyond their names. So unfortunately though, Britta's one is the only one that actually
Yeah, that's sticks. The one for us to know.
Britt is the one that sticks in the show, unfortunately. So
I liked that Abed was used like a Abed. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I like that. I liked this episode. It's definitely my favorite Halloween one for sure. So
oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, I love it. I love this. It just makes me laugh. Like, there's so much about this episode that is so funny with all the different storytelling, the facial reactions, even the little Beetlejuice gag at the beginning of the episode, like all those fun things.
It was this episode. I missed it. Dang it.
What yeah, was the it's Beetlejuice when, gag.
So they mention it. They mentioned Beetlejuice two times in episodes before this. So Slater says it in one of the episodes. She goes, "Oh, what's her name, Britta?" But like something Beetlejuice, and then Britta says in cooperative calligraphy, "Oh, don't you usually wear like the Beetlejuice stripey underwear?" Like, and so they realized the show realized they had said it already twice. So when Annie says something about like, oh, well, she's at Britta's computer and says, the only thing you have on here is like NPR or something and the Beetlejuice yep, soundtrack, the you Beetlejuice can see soundtrack. In the window a guy dressed up as Beetlejuice walks by. So
wow, I never noticed that.
It's the little things, people. Yeah, so this is my favorite Halloween episode. Although I will say, after watching the next one, I definitely have a greater appreciation for it.
Britta in this episode.
Oh my gosh. All right. It's time to talk about paranormal parentage. I can say that. It wasn't
a tongue twister.
That is a tongue twister. So paranormal parentage is our haunted house style Halloween episode, essentially. So the group is going to go to Vicky's Halloween party, and instead they get derailed because Pierce has locked himself in his panic room and he needs them to help him get out. So they spend the entire episode essentially breaking off into pairings and wandering around trying to find this notebook where Pierce has written down the code to get out of the panic room. And creepy stuff starts happening. And then, of course, because it's community, there's always a twist. So paranormal parentage, the quote of the episode that I chose. Oh, also, this episode is written by Megan Gans. We love Megan Gans around here. The quote of the episode that I chose was, "We do some things. We do a lot of things. Not all the things. Things." And like, just again, that is not a funny line unless it's delivered by Donald Glover in a Halloween costume. All right, season four. This is season four. It's pretty divisive. Yeah, it's divisive for people overall. So I wanted to get your thoughts on like overall season four. How do you feel about it?
I'm going to skip it in my community rewatch because I hate it that much. I'm like, you guys know me. I'm not a comedy person. So like community for me is probably like my limit of like what I find funny, like especially with the more like outlandish episodes. And so season four was just like the slapstick stuff that I hate. And so I really found it difficult to get through. I think I spent 1 month just trying to trek through season four after watching the first three in like a couple weeks.
Yeah, I kind of feel similar. I don't have strong hate for it or anything. It's just like I dropped off before then. I was rewatching Community with her, and that was about when I stopped caring so much. It's like, whatever.
It's just like the first couple seasons were so heartwarming. Like you found morals, I guess, where you didn't expect to, and just like the group dynamics was really great. And then it just became like a whole lot of nonsense in there with like the different styles and things that they were playing with. But in that, for me, they lost like all of the original things that made me really love community.
Thomas?
The puppet episode is how I got into the show. And so it's funny because I've been rewatching Community. So I'm in the third season right now. So this is going to be the first time that I experienced the fourth season after the buildup of the regular season. So I might have a very different opinion of season four after this. But right now, I'm like, nah. Because especially with this episode, I enjoyed this episode.
Yeah.
This was like early in the for season two.
Yeah, so. This is only the second episode in season four, which is interesting to me.
Ludicrous to me that, like, seasons used to be 23 episodes. Isn't that ridiculous?
The first season of Community was 25 episodes long.
That's insane.
That is a lot of episodes. And, like, I know so much of network comedy was at that time. Like, you think about it, like, The Office and Parks and Rec and 30 Rock. Like, they were all running episodes that were 20-plus episodes long. And then you get to, like, the end of, like, when this show was starting to wrap up and, like, you get to be, like, 13 or shorter episodes. And obviously with, like, streaming models and things like that, shows are getting shorter, which cuts out, I think, a lot of, like, season one. There's a lot of episodes that I don't care for because they just feel unnecessary. Like, this just happened.
Nice, nice syndication money.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always been... and I've talked about this before. I don't hate season four as much as most people hate season four. I actually don't like seasons five and six as much as most people do. I actually hate season six apart from like two episodes. So sorry, that's not going to color. I'm not going to tell anyone anything, but they know why.
No wonder you don't give out your last name on this podcast.
I'm not ashamed of it. And I mean, I might change my opinion on a rewatch, but I don't necessarily... think that I will. I think that people, a lot of who were watching at the show at the time, obviously season four is the only season without Dan Harmon as the showrunner and EP. And so I think a lot of people were so dependent on Dan being like present that they did not, you know, when the show was airing, I remember people not liking things that I feel like they would have probably thought were okay if Dan Harmon's name had been on it. Yeah. And I mean, that's okay. Like your opinion is your opinion. And I never like, you know, I know everyone on every side of the spectrum of like, I love season four. I hate season four. I feel meh about season four. And kind of where I land is in the middle of like, it's kind of like most seasons of television shows that I feel like there are some really good episodes. There are some really bad episodes. And most of it is just kind of fine. Like it's okay. I appreciate this episode because of the fact that I know quite a few of the original writers, like Megan Gans, like Andy, stayed around and decided to stay working on the show. And that gave it, like this episode, I feel like the reason why I like it is because I partially, like, I just like it. But then knowing that Megan Gans wrote it, I trust Megan to be able to find that emotional heart of a story. And there's a lot of season four that like does not have that. And that's because there are some newer writers. Mm-hmm. I will say one of my favorite episodes in season four, and everyone talks about this, is the Body Switch episode that was written by Jim Rash. And I love, obviously, Jim Rash is so great and talented. And that one was a really good one. And that one was just a very phenomenally acted one too by Danny and Donald. Yeah. So like there are some highs in season four and there are some lows in season four. But for me, where I land is like... that's kind of how I feel about most TV shows. Like there are highs and lows. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, it's not my favorite. It's kind of the middle of the road, but there's some things that I don't like happening when Dan Harmon comes back. I feel like the show, I feel like there's a lot of cynicism that comes up that I don't like. And that's not what I liked about seasons one through three. So for me, season four is just like, it's fine. Like it exists. There's some good, there's some bad. And this is one of the good, like I love the fun in this episode because I think that it is fun. And there's some really good, like emotional stuff that they do with this episode too. So let's talk about A Haunted Mansion because Pierce's house. I do love that we got a chance to actually like see much more of it because we really have
a shitty looking house.
Oh, really?
That's where he's been hiding the taste.
Oh, it's just like, all right, that's fair. I liked the Haunted Mansion kind of setting for all of these characters. I think it was real fun for them to all wander off in pairings. Before I talk about that, I do want to mention everyone's Halloween costumes, as we talked about earlier. Apparently, Jeff and Annie texted only about their Halloween costumes, did not clarify what was meant, and he thought that she was going to be his ring girl. she heard The Ring, the girl from The Ring. However, Dean Pelton got the message. Also, I mean, do we want to talk about how Dean Pelton knows that stuff?
I mean, but he's also read his email, so.
That's true. I mean, that is true. That's canon, so that's Dean Pelton. Gosh, it's really so weird how Jim Rash manages to pull that off. It's not
his abs are amazing.
It's not, it's all of it. It's all just fit.
I was like, where has this been hiding? It's like Secret Chidi from
oh my gosh, The Good Place. Right though? Like, okay. I think it's funny. I think it's finally Shirley has a non, like, and she's Leia. She spells it all out for all of us. And Andre's going as this. I think that I saw someone post that like Britta's ham costume is actually for sale for like $2,000. You can buy that costume.
I don't think I like anything that much.
No.
I'm sure there's some like real stands out there who would be all about
it. I'm sure there's someone who's going to buy it.
Trying to get in her ham.
But that person is not me. But that is a costume.
Jacobs was in here.
And then you've got Calvin and Hobbes. Just
I so appreciate
that. Oh, that's cute. What that was.
I love
Thomas
it.
Go home.
Thomas.
I didn't know.
I didn't get it either.
I was just like, oh, a tiger. That's cute.
Y'all need to get to the bookshelf.
yes, that was very cute. And also it was funny because I think it was funny to me because obviously one, I won't talk a lot about this, but like in season four, they weirdly do this thing where since Britta and Troy are paired off, they kind of pair off Jeff and Annie by default as like doing more coupley things, like a couple's costume, even though they're not a couple. But it is really funny.
Like that.
It's interesting. It's an interesting choice by the show because I feel like it's just an interesting choice. Dan Harmon wasn't there and they decided to write them like they were a couple. I'll leave that there. But I like that Jeff was like, or like Britta was like, you should leave the couple's costume to the couples. And he's like, yeah, you should tell your boyfriend's boyfriend about that. Because obviously Britta was not part of that couple's costume, but because she wandered around in a giant ham costume the entire night. I thought the Haunted Mansion concept of them breaking off and doing things was really fun. Like I liked that. We put them in
Annie's line delivery on this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. When he finds the like secret doorway.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Perfection.
I like the haunted house. I felt like they wanted to do something with it with like the clue magnifying glass over the mat thing. Yes. And it's a haunted house. But honestly, I felt like it was just like the most normal of these three. Mm-hmm. Like you could replace a haunted house with the halls of the school and it's just them walking around talking in a slightly weird situation. And I think that's one of the things I like most about it. It's the most just them sort of being them without some other gag. Although obviously there was another gag.
Yeah.
Although it was weird because, again, something I realized watching these three, these sort of holiday specials, they all just take place over one period of time instead of like the regular episodes that like take place over a couple of days or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what difference that makes, but like watching that last one, it felt like it was weird that it was just taking the wrong amount of time for the characters.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I did like the map because that was very reminiscent of like season three's Pillow and Blankets kind of dual episodes of them having these extra things that they're integrating into the show to show you like where all the different characters are. I just thought that was like a nice little nod. I like Jeff and Britta when they team up and they scheme, and I loved that they like teamed up for this one. I thought that was fun. I thought obviously Annie getting to, I liked Annie's line of like, I hate reference humor.
That confused like that. Me where she was like, oh, I don't watch scary movies. But then in the season three episode, like she was the most graphic out of all of them, I feel.
I feel like she just knows how to tell story. Like that one was like, I know, like I don't like scary movies, but like I know the plot well enough to know that you have to have a twist in there. And also like, I don't know, I guess like it depends on like what your definition of scary movie is. Like I don't like slasher films, but like I'll watch A Quiet Place because I know that that's like anything that's like not real, like werewolves or things like that don't like, yeah, they don't scare me as much as like something that legitimately.
You could also just like not watch scary movies, but read those kinds of books. Like that's fair. A thing too.
Yeah.
True.
But yeah, I liked that all of the different team ups got a chance to happen around the and as is customary, there was a twist. So I liked that twist as well. Yeah, this episode though, it's interesting because from what I remember hearing, since Dan Harmon wasn't in season four, what I remember hearing was that the show talks a lot about Jeff and Jeff and his dad and their relationship,
yes,
but never wanted to actually have Jeff meet his dad. But in season four, they definitely do that. And in
Dan Harmon was pissed.
Yeah. I do not think he was thrilled about that. I liked this storyline though. Like I liked this part of this, because I feel like we've talked about this before with so many different episodes, and even the ones that we were just talking about, like there has to be some sort of emotional component to it, or else the homage, the whatever, breaks down, like if it's not rooted in the characters. So obviously this episode is like set up to be everyone going and wandering around Pierce's mansion. But I really liked that there was like this nice emotional heart to Jeff and his like reconciling this idea of like, well, maybe I should call my dad. And the boxing gloves were just a really nice, very subtle thing to put in to kind of connect those stories. I wanted to know what you guys thought about that particular, because that's like really, there are other storylines and we can talk about them, but that's like kind of the biggest storyline to come out of this particular episode.
I like that he and Pierce get to do some work in the direction of their family in this episode. It's nice. And even though Pierce sneaks in some garbage in his nice little moment, it's still like a nice moment for Pierce. So I like that for both of them. And I feel like Jeff has to grow. It's like, that's the other bit of community. Whatever other thing is happening, he's sort of the main character, and he needs to regress in his arc to become a good, complete, unified person. Yeah. So it's good. And it's actually, I think, a good use of Britta's psychology thing. It gives it some positive impact, some use that's not obnoxious as it could be.
Yeah. I feel like
that
what you're saying,
favorite part of the episode, just the Jeff and Britta stuff with her, like them being like, stop picking up these imaginary phones, or the fact that it did work, like that she actually was good at getting to the crux of the matter.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a good continuation of what I feel like have been parallels throughout this series of Pierce and Jeff, where like, I feel like Jeff can see like, if he doesn't change, then he'd essentially become Pierce, sans the racism. But
Yeah. I mean, Danielle, you brought up the point of like, a lot of it feels, the psych feels absurd. It felt more absurd and over the top in the last Halloween episode. And in this one, it feels so subtle and under the radar that it works, because she's not being so zany and over the top. And she's actually working without realizing that she's like, and without Jeff realizing what's happening. Like, wait a second, no, you're not going to let me have this conversation. And really what I liked too is that I think this episode works for that reason, because Jeff comes to the realization himself, like Britta's not beating him over the head with it. And like, they don't have to have another conversation toward the end of the episode where she's like, so did you think about what I just told you? Da, da, da. And he contemplates hearing Pierce and talking about family and being alone and that kind of thing. And you're right. I think there's always a good, I don't like Pierce as a character, because I feel like I'm not supposed to like Pierce as a character. So good job, show. You knew what you were doing. But like, I do love the moments where we get like in Beginner Pottery, when we get that conversation between Jeff and Pierce, where Pierce like rows himself back out onto the parking lot in that little boat. It's good, honest moments. And then I can't remember what episode in this season, but it's like the episode where they deal with the white whale student, and Jeff and Pierce are kind of like, Jeff's job is to distract Pierce from being basically invading. And like, they have some really good moments. And I think that when Jeff is able to see like, yes, if I don't work on this, like I will learn it too late, like Pierce did, like, cause Pierce learns his lesson sometimes, but it's way too late in life. Or I just won't learn it and I'll end up alone like Pierce. And I don't want that. And so I think that that's just a really interesting parallel. Cause you're right. Like even the whole point of the show is for Jeff to grow. If Jeff doesn't grow, there's no point in the show because that's what the show set out, and everything else is how he gets there. And all of that is ancillary to the fact that like Jeff needs to grow. Cause if he's not growing and he's just staying the same, there's really no point. Like that's not the point of a show, a good writing. And I liked this because it wasn't over the top. I think that the subtlety of the very end of the episode where you don't get to see the conversation or if, you know, Jeff's dad actually picks up the phone. I liked that. I liked that Jeff clearly can talk all he wants to about not wanting anything to do with his dad, but he has gloves that are his dad's that he's using in his Halloween costume. So it's those little subtle nuances that I feel like the show, when it does it well, can really do. And that was just a really good, subtle story that didn't beat you over the head with things. And I liked that. There's also some other side stories. We talked about it a little bit. We alluded to it about Troy and Shirley's little
sex romp.
Yeah.
That was
not together.
Like, yeah. Shirley and Shane.
Yeah.
No. Where she thinks that Pierce told Troy not to open that door because she thought it was a library.
Yeah.
Like, you racist son of it, and it opens it up and it's a sex dungeon. And the fact that she knew about BDSM.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, but she doesn't fully commit to
more that stuff that she pretends she don't.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's just another instance again of the show being like, Shirley knows and has experienced the world, but we're not going to talk about it because it's much more fun. Isn't it funnier, guys, if she's just a judgy Christian rather than like unpacking all of these things about her life that are way more interesting? Really? Yeah, but I liked that was... It's really interesting though, because I don't feel like that was any concern like that was brought up. Like I feel like that's just Shirley projecting what she thinks Britta is like, and
yeah,
that was kind of
she's
weird.
She's like, "Oh, you're with Britta, so more than likely you're gonna experience something."
Yeah, like
Troy has no idea.
Yeah,
him swinging on the swing. I was like,
oh. That shot of him suddenly swinging on that swing with that big old Donald Glover grin.
It reminded me of, was it The Boys? Was that movie? About the kids where they're like raunchy eighth
the
graders
boys?
Or something like that. Oh, is it called The Boys?
It's called Good
Boys. I thought that was an Amazon series.
The Boys is an Amazon series, but it's Good Boys.
There it is. Good Boys. That's what I meant.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird story because again, like, I don't know. I feel like Shirley is just projecting that, you know, maybe I've just solved the problem that I have with Troy and Britta's relationship is that all the other characters are talking about Troy and Britta and I never really see Troy and Britta's relationship like unfold. Like Shirley's talking about Shirley's talking about how, oh, you must not, you know, be as experienced as Britta. And, you know, everyone's talking about how, oh yeah, we're totally fine with Troy and Britta dating and Troy and Britta, da, da, da. But we don't actually get a chance to see who Troy and Britta are in a relationship, really.
That's weird. I think I kind of feel the opposite because I feel like I kind of like that their relationship is not a big deal. I mean, it kind of sucks because it's like they don't know what to do with these characters, but it's at least not obnoxious about them not knowing what they want to do with it. And I think a few times we do get little glimpses of them. What was one that was in this one or something where she wants to go watch some movie with him?
Yeah.
Or was that or that? Or
yeah, Inspector,
she wants to go watch
Inspector
yeah.
Space Time.
And it's like she shows like a genuine interest in him, not like dealing with relationship problems or like doing some external thing. It's like they are actually connecting and it's not a great relationship or anything, but like sometimes we get nice little peeks into it.
I liked that, but I also felt like it was so weird. Like, are we supposed to believe that Britta's not? Like Shirley's basically like, oh, Britta probably wants to do all this crazy stuff, Troy. And then Britta literally at the end of the episode is like, I'd rather like go and watch TV with you, like than do anything else, like than go to a party. So it almost feels like so weird that all these other characters are commenting on their relationship. And if I would have watched their very natural relationship of, you know, and the next episode after this is the Inspecticon episode. So we get a chance to see that unfold a little bit more. But it's just so interesting because, like, I don't feel like I ever really get to see Troy and Britta through the lens of Troy and Britta. I always am watching it through all of these other characters, putting all of these expectations and things on them. And it's over so quickly that I don't get a chance to really sit with it. But I loved the end of that episode for them. Like, was Troy was like, yeah, of course I'd love to. And she's like, oh, I would love to just go watch TV with you and that kind of thing.
Sweet.
It was very sweet. They're very cute. And then obviously, Pierce's whole, oh my gosh. I don't know why. I think this is why I get over, like, I'm like, why are you all still friends with him after all of this? It's everything. Like,
I will say though that part of the reason I think they're still friends with him is because he has these moments like this, like we're talking about, where he has these little like pieces of hope.
Yeah.
And he's usually just trash, but just like just enough.
Yeah.
He does this other thing where he's like, fine, you can hang out. But he's just a trash man.
I think my favorite like thing with Pierce is when he finally sings the composes the Greendale song.
Oh my gosh.
Where he's just blatantly, like unbeknownst to him, stolen. That's just the way it goes. And everything else I don't like.
Yeah.
Like he's just
Oh, it also helps that he's mostly ignorant of how terrible he is.
No, never mind.
He's not self-aware enough to know he should do better, so it's easy to forgive him. Well, not easy.
No, he knows that, like, he's right. Crazy and racist. Like, he says that in the previous episode. He's like, yeah, there was a crazy racist.
He doesn't always know.
Okay.
Because I'm the old and racist one.
Yeah, I'm the old crazy racist friend. Like, wait a second.
And then he says, like, or I was, or something that. Like,
I was your friend. Like, I thought that he was mentioning, like, that as in the context of, or I thought that I was your friend. Maybe I'm not your friend anymore.
You know, it's totally funny. I always
thought I'm not racist.
I'm not racist anymore because the character started to turn around.
I think that he was just like, so I'm not your crazy racist old friend anymore. Well, fine. I guess I'm just, you have a new crazy racist old friend and I'm not it. Like, I think that's what he was trying to point out. Like, okay. Pierce is
there's been so many times where I thought that he just wouldn't be around anymore.
Well, like, yes. I mean,
I think it was the end of season 2 where like, he's like, oh, I think I've outgrown you guys or something like that.
Yeah.
And then like Jeff is like, hi.
He's going to come back.
And he turns around and I'm just like, I guess that's it.
We got so faked out. I mean, and we, for anyone
even who the knows paintball,
anything like, about the yeah. show, they know that Chevy Chase was not the easiest person to work with. And that's putting it very nicely.
To learn more about that, check out Harmontown, the documentary.
Just listen to any of the cast members talk about it. Joel talks about it a little bit in his book. Just listen
Donald
to
Donald Glover talks about it.
Yeah, let's just talk. Let's just it's just a fun time. But I think that when he's used well earlier on, it's usually in ways that it's not him hyping up being like this crazy racist old man. It's just him being like someone who is genuinely trying to get people to like him. And that's where Pierce can be an endearing person. I liked this the revelation at the end of like Gilbert being there and just like wanting.
I didn't feel comfortable with the implications of what that relationship was going to end up being.
I was so confused. I forgot, like not forgot because I didn't even remember him. Like, I was just like, wait, that's Gus from Breaking Bad. What the crap is going on?
This is the other Pollo Hermano.
Didn't they sum it up though too in this episode?
Yeah, they did.
Or Annie did sum it up. She was like, oh yeah. Like, I guess I've never said it out loud before.
Right, exactly. And I was like, that was weird. But then he actually shows up and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of resolution that also takes the weight off of Pierce being the bad guy again. It's just kind of like, well, he might be a bad guy, but also like look, he has family. Like, yeah, so I guess he's not that bad of a person. I guess the lesson that we can glean from the end of that episode in terms of Pierce.
He's not the literal devil.
That's the bar. Yeah, so I liked that this was a fun... it was a fun episode, too. I think one of my favorite scenes is still when the group splits up, but then when they come back together and they're just yelling at each other.
Yeah. So I have subtitles on when I watch anything.
Everything.
And it said relieved screaming after the cast was reunited, and that made me laugh. Like, just they were screaming. They were screaming, and then there was relieved screaming.
Relieved they were in
a I wrote that down so I could share that with you guys.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Relieved screaming. Any thoughts about this episode that we haven't
shared? I thought that it was Courtney Cox, because Abed just kept looking for television for Cougar Town, and Courtney Cox of Friends fame is also in Cougar Town. And for the Halloween down, whatever he said, I don't remember. It was like a Halloween themed episode with Cougar Town. I thought I heard Courtney Cox's voice as what he was watching, but she's not credited. So,
I thought that I did too. Is that not
okay? So it's not just me.
No, I think that that is her voice. I mean, I do love the community Cougar Town connection.
Crossover, yeah.
Yes. Well, and also because obviously Bill Lawrence was in charge of Cougar Town, Neil Goldman.
And Scrubs.
Yeah, and Scrubs. And then Neil Goldman and Garrett Donovan worked on both of those, worked on Scrubs and worked on Community as EPs. So there's a nice little connection and crossover there. No, I definitely thought that I heard it. So I just wonder if she's just not...
She might not be credited, right?
Yeah. I was curious because I had never actually watched Cougar Town and like if that was a real thing or if that was something that the show made up, like if that was actually something that Okay. All right. I figured that it probably was. I just didn't know for sure.
You mean the Halloween specific?
Like episode? Halloween, like if that was a real thing.
Oh, I thought you meant the show itself. I was no, the show exists.
Yeah. like, I know that, Thomas. I just didn't know the Halloween down thing was like a real thing that
could be. Yeah. No, they're a bunch of alcoholics, but I don't know if it was a Halloween.
That much I do know about the show too.
I mean, it is.
Oh my gosh. Any final thoughts on any of the Halloween stuff? Anything about Halloween?
Annie's entrance as the ring girl scared the bejesus out of me.
I will tell you, I don't watch scary movies. I watched The Ring with a group of friends when I was, I don't know, probably like late teens. And my friend's boyfriend at the time had seen it and promised to tell us when a scary part was coming up so like we could avoid our eyes or whatever. I distinctly remember he forgot because there's a scene with a creepy girl in the closet and he did not tell us about that. And we all screamed and it freaked me out and I don't watch scary movies. And The Ring was probably my last real scary movie that I ever watched.
I still have not seen that movie.
That's something I would never watch.
I don't feel like we need that. No.
No, thank you.
Mm-mm.
I don't need that in my life.
Mm-mm. No, I'm good.
Normally, I don't like seasonally themed episodes of TV shows, but I really enjoy their Halloween episodes. Their Christmas ones, I don't care too much about that. But I do like the Halloween ones.
Did you say you don't care about Christmas, Ethan?
I don't think I do.
Get off this podcast.
Wait, I'm just kidding.
No, are they Christmas episodes?
Okay, yes, that's how I feel as well.
Don't hate them, but
I do love the special credits for the Halloween. Like, I know for sure when we talked about the Dungeons and Dragons, I know for sure Dan Harmon mentioned the Dungeons and Dragons opening, like, Cootie Catcher credits cost him $4,000. So I can only imagine the Halloween credits, but they use them throughout all of these episodes. So
why would it cost him $4,000?
Because it's extra. Like, I don't know. Okay. It was $4,000.
I was like, it's not real.
No, but like to do
the different
themed credits that they did for Dungeons and Dragons specifically. Because the Halloween ones they use every Halloween because they have a special Halloween opening. But for the Dungeons and Dragons one, they only use it for Dungeons and Dragons, and that's it.
I mean, it's worth it. He had his
own. That was just a perfect version of the.
Also, it's nice to see where gifts come from. That wasn't the Halloween. Never mind.
I was like, wait, isn't that a Christmas episode?
I was gonna mention Troy doing the smiley thing. But yeah. That's from the episode.
That's from
different from that. Sorry.
The documentary episode. I quite enjoy any kind of special themed episodes of TV because I feel like it's always a nice
very departure. Special episode.
Yeah. Well, not a very special episode. I don't like a very special episodes. TM. I do like holiday themed ones because you get a chance to see the same characters in different scenarios. But I liked these because it's fun to see the group celebrate things. And, you know, I liked the middle one. Season 3 is still probably my favorite. Okay. So since we've talked about all three of them, to circle back to Ethan's earlier discussion about Dean rankings of costumes, we've got Lady Gaga. We've got the devil costume. And then we've got the ring girl.
I think ring girl is impressive, but my vote is for the devil.
Wait, that was Dean?
Yeah. Dean Pelton was the ring girl that Annie was supposed to be.
Okay, never mind. I got it. I was thinking of Annie.
I was like, Annie was supposed to dress up like Dean.
I had concerns.
I was very confused.
Okay. I'm going devil. That's my vote.
I vote Lady Gaga.
I gotta go Gaga.
I'm going with the devil costume because I feel like he's also wearing a skirt.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. And that
I did not like his shoes. The shoes and the Gaga costume kept distracting me.
I just liked his pattern stockings.
Yeah. I like when he would play with his hair, though.
Yes. I will say the added chainsaw to the devil's costume does bring a certain level.
He was saying some stuff. What was he saying? I can't remember.
But he says, the last one he says marriage. Is gay marriage.
Yeah. Gay marriage.
And only the way that Jim Rash could deliver it is
swinging a chainsaw in a devil skirt.
Wait, is he
Oscar,
gay?
I'm sorry, hold on. I apologize because we have said before we are not allowed to just call him Jim Rash. It is Academy Award winner.
X. There it is.
Jim Rash.
Academy Award winning Jim Rash.
All right.
There you go. So we've officially ranked those three. I gotta say, they're just all so impressive. Jim Rash. I will forever love, though, the montage of Dean costumes that we get later on. Or, yes, I guess later on in season 2.
Oh man, he's
anything. Hilarious. Anything left to add, guys? You did so well.
Oh, we didn't let you down. I'm so happy.
This is the first time I've positively contributed to a podcast.
What?
Stop it.
That's a lie.
Normally, our other one, I'm just listening and not understanding what's going on. That's how much I love Community.
I love this so much.
You asked, yes, Jim Rash, Academy mm-hmm. Award, Jim Rash is yes. queer in real life.
Yes.
Okay, because I was about to say, that is some masterful acting if he was just pure straight. Oh, it was gosh. Masterful acting anyway. He is definitely, I think, my favorite character.
So
funny. Stand back when he's my favorite.
That's also one of the things that, like, Jim Rash is just so freaking talented. Like, he's just so, he's a writer, he's a director, he's great at acting. Like, I love
He's
Jim Rash.
So fit.
He's a really cool kitchen if you, like, watch him on, like, he's been on the Darkest Timeline podcast, and they do, like, video stuff. His kitchen is, like, so fun and cool. I think he's the coolest.
Academy Award winning. Jim
Academy Award winning.
How did he win an award?
I said it.
I would never forget
He wrote The Descendants with Nat Faxon, who's his writing partner.
That's in a Disney movie, right?
What? No.
Okay.
That's not, I mean, isn't it though? Like, it's not. Is it the same name?
What's going on?
Right? Yeah, it is the same name.
Okay.
Wait, is that the one where like the Disney
Oh, wait, no, sorry.
Kids?
Descendants without the is the Disney one. The Descendants is the one that had George Clooney and Juan.
Excuse me.
We went on a wild ride.
We went on, it's all about the articles, people. That Jim Rash's speech is iconic from winning that
because,
award.
Wait, do we want to give it away?
Thomas, go ahead and give it away.
So Angelina Jolie presents the award and she does like this pose, like a power stance almost. And Jim goes up there, him along with the other Academy Award winners, and he grabs the Oscar and imitates the same pose. It is perfection.
Angelina Jolie is wearing like a dress that has a huge slit. So she's showing a bunch of leg, and Jim literally just mimics her stance. And it is as he accepts this award. It's great. You should watch the speech. Jim is just like, he's so, and for those of you who haven't watched, who are listening to this and have not watched The Way, Way Back, you should definitely watch that because that is also Jim Rash and Nat Faxon. And it is a really, really good movie. We love Academy Award winner Jim Rash. Apologies, Jim, for not using your full title. Just like we have to say, AKA Academy Award winner Captain Marvel Brie Larson, also in her full title.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so, oh my gosh. We
did
it.
Do that for Donald Glover?
I mean,
you say Golden Globe,
Renaissance man, Donald Glover.
We just say Donald Glover and then just start listing his accomplishments because, like, he just has so many.
I mean, we'd be here all day if we listed all of their accomplishments because Alison Brie is accomplished, Yvette Nicole Brown.
We love. Yeah, it's just all of this cast is very accomplished and we love them so.
And as an actual doctor.
Yeah. Ken was an actual doctor. You know, they're all very talented. We talked about Halloween. Look at that. I'm so proud. We did so well. Guys.
This is like the most Halloween it will get in COVID because
in 2020.
In your house this year.
Yeah, my costume is staying inside.
Yeah, I literally was like, should I buy a costume just so that I can sit on the couch and eat candy? I did. I didn't buy it. To be fair, I had most of it already assembled because I had bought last year. I was 90s Carol Danvers. So I had a leather jacket.
Yes.
This year
you
I
made
decided.
The Nine Inch Nails
yes.
Shirt.
And this year I've decided it's very on brand for me this Halloween to sit on the couch, eat candy, and be Bad Janet from The Good Place because it just feels on
land. I would be Bad Janet.
I would have been your Good Janet.
I know.
To being Disco Janet.
Who would I be? Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, you would be that man she created.
No.
Derek?
No, Derek. I'd be
in the wintertime and they're trying to figure it out.
Actually
started growing out my hair for Halloween.
Ted Danson. I'd wear a suit. It'd be great.
Oh my gosh. If the world is open by 2021, can we all just group do like
okay.
A Good Place costume?
That's a verbal agreement.
Okay. That would be so
I'm not,
I still
like,
have
to finish the
yet.
Series first.
Okay. You have not finished the series yet? Oh, I guess it's not on. Is it not? Oh, I guess it's going to be at the end of this month. It's going to be on Netflix.
It's there.
So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the final season will finally be on Netflix. Thank goodness.
Okay.
This month. So.
We know I'll be binging.
I'm so happy that you guys got to do this. My real friends. Not that. The rest of you who've been on this.
See, now you've done it.
I'm so sorry.
There it is.
Thanks for letting us join. We feel so honored.
Well, I feel honored to have you guys because obviously I would be doing this with you. We've done things like this even when we don't have podcasts to talk to friends on. So it's just our friendship being recorded for posterity. So
yeah, we built a gingerbread man talking about movies for 2 hours years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is very on brand for us. So before we wrap up with our last two questions, which are customary for the podcast, I want to give anyone an opportunity to promote or plug anything you would like to plug. Where can people follow you, find you, if you would like to do that?
You knew it.
It's like
Instagram.com/Thomas, Thomas Hester, Hester. I'm getting my whole government. The number 2. And also, we have podcasts. Check out Altman Street Productions on anywhere you find podcasts. There's some really cool podcasts on there.
Yeah. We'll link in the show notes for everyone. We're going to link everything that, or the last couple of questions, we'll link in show notes so everyone can find and follow. Ethan, Danielle, Thomas, you guys are the...
Oh, you should tell them about the scholarship, but we should do that one.
Okay. Ooh. You want to tell them about
no,
it?
No, I yeah. said definitely not me is what I said.
Yeah.
So Ethan and I have a scholarship for, well, we have 2 scholarships. One is for undergrads who are young Black men that are interested in becoming a speech-language pathologist. And the other is for any young Black person who is interested in a career in advocacy. And that website is, oh, we can't do the scholarship because it has our last name in it, because our whole government name.
Are we not doing that? I know Jen's not doing that, but Thomas already did it. So
I did. Yes,
it's up to you guys.
Choice. I guess we could do it.
It's up to you guys.
Scholarship, levien scholarship.com.
Just send me the link. I'll put it in the
show. If you find it, you're the chosen one.
If you find it, it's meant to be.
You made this website.
And then you can follow me posting photos of my dogs on Instagram. And
my gosh.
Miss.dlevine.
I love it. I love it so much.
Especially with Cairo. That's my entire.
Yeah, Cairo is basically
your persona.
Oh my gosh.
We need to tell you about some recent developments with Luther, but we can tell you.
All right.
This is also a dog.
We'll say, oh, yes, Luther's also a dog. We'll do that after we finish recording. You can tell me developments. Okay, cool. So we are going to ask our last two questions. So our second to last question here is, what is one piece of media, it can be a book, TV show, film, podcast, from either a Black, Indigenous, or person of color creator, and or featuring Black men and women, Indigenous people, or people of color that you would like people to consume this week, that you would like to...
I'm going
to
go real quick to Tenet. Go watch Tenet. But also, for real, you should watch Lovecraft Country.
I was going to talk about Lovecraft Country.
You're not allowed because like it was written by a white guy, but I think you should.
Tenet was written by a white guy, right?
So I think that it's written by a white guy. However,
but it has Black people in it. We're fine.
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem with being written by a white guy, but I know some people do. So I was just going to...
Yeah. That'll be all right. You
should engage with it.
Well, Ethan already started talking about it. So that is mine this week because I finally caught up on everything that I was very glad to have watched it in the daytime because as we have already discussed on this podcast, I'm very easily freaked out by anything, especially scary stories about spirits and ghosts and things like that. So I will 100% second the recommendation for Lovecraft Country, though. I would say if you're anywhere near my level of don't watch scary things or things that give you jump scares, watch it during the daytime. But I'm telling you right now, if Journey Smollett does not win
Emmy
next season,
NAACP award, Golden
Globes, anything, then I am just I don't know what life is anymore because she is phenomenal in this show. And that's it. That's her. This is her awards campaign already because she's just so fantastic. So that is my recommendation.
If you like Tick in Lovecraft Country, you should check out Last Black Men in San Francisco. That's a movie. And then if you like podcasts, this has nothing to do with Lovecraft Country, but my favorite podcast is The Read. Mm-hmm. It has Crystal West and Kid Fury, and they're 2 Black queer creatives. And he actually signed a deal with HBO, so shout out to him.
Cool. Cool.
Well, if you like podcasts, you can also check out Melanated Faith. It's two Black girls just talking about life and not Black trauma.
Yeah, I love Catherine and Faith.
Nice, refreshing voice.
Ugh, Catherine and Faith are so fun. They're just, yeah. I love
them. They're just your girlfriends. They're your girlfriends that you're listening to, having a good chat with, that just happen to be Black and Christian.
So. Yes. We will link all of this for you in the show notes so that you can go consume things this week.
Girlfriends is also on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
Created by Phil Blackmore.
All of this next week. I'm so excited.
Girlfriends and Sister Sister was just recently added too, right? I still remember that theme song.
I'm sorry.
So before we wrap up, this is obviously a community rewatch podcast. So I always like to ask, what are you currently rewatching, or what's something that you enjoy rewatching?
I'm rewatching Community. That's so funny.
We had been rewatching Fringe for a little bit. I'm currently rewatching Korra because this is Daniel's first watch of that.
I haven't watched Avatar,
which is also a rewatch for me.
Yeah.
But the real rewatch of my life right now is Atlanta. That's what I'm rewatching. Just watch that.
Yes.
Watch it.
I'm currently watching Community. And then I guess like my favorite rewatches is Boy Meets World of Friends.
Love Boy Meets World. As I've talked about on a couple of these, I will have finished this by the time this airs in October, but I'm currently rewatching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend because I started doing that from start to finish. And then I think what I'm actually going to do next is because my roommate and I watched Pride and Prejudice, I think I'm going to rewatch the Lizzie Bennet Diaries on YouTube.
Yes.
That was so fun. And it's just a very nice dose of happiness in these very unhappy times. Well, Ethan, Danielle, Thomas, thank you so much for being here. I'm so glad that we got to do this. Obviously you guys are gonna come back. Thomas, I'm very excited for you to come back to talk about the episode that I hate,
the puppet episode,
the puppet episode in season 4.
Thomas
has called dibs.
He is ready. It's musicals.
Whenever there's music in shows, I'm there.
So great. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to the Community Rewatch podcast. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you did, be sure to follow along with us wherever you get your podcasts. And we're on Twitter, so follow us at COMM Rewatch Pod for general funness, for new episodes, and to maybe get some sneak peeks of what's to come. Many, many thanks to our editor, Chelsea Eichels, for putting together today's episode. And thanks to Maddie Shook for designing the key art for this podcast. Again, we're so glad to go back to Greendale with you. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Say, Chelsea, cut this. So it's fun. There was a super cut of like 6 times the one time. And she's probably going to do it right now because I'm actually recording. So she's going to listen to me.
Well, Chels, I'm going to go get a drink. So I'll bring it back.
Yo, Chels, I just want to say what's up.
Chels never gets like highs. Hi, Chels. You're the best.
Yeah, because that's weird.
Because when she's on the call, it's better. When she's not on the call, it's just fun for her to listen to what happens.
Fun? Is it fun for her?
I mean, you can answer this, Chelsea. You can answer if it's fun.